Before I begin, I acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation as the traditional custodians of the land on which this work was developed and is presented. I offer my respect to elders past, present, and emerging. Welcome back to the Community Library, a podcast, book club, and discussion space. I'm your host, Angauri Rice. Hi, if you haven't been here before, welcome. I'm Angauri. I am an actor and a podcaster, and I make podcast episodes about books, movies, pop culture, but mostly books and pop culture. If that's something that interests you, then feel free to take a look around. I have episodes on Shakespeare and Jane Austen, also episodes on Twilight and Percy Jackson. So whatever floats your boat, we cover a range of things here, and I would love for you to be a part of the community library. So every 3 months on the podcast, I am checking in with you, the audience, to tell you about how my reading year is going. And this isn't to, I guess, have a competition with anyone or have a competition even with myself. I just love statistics. I love graphs. I love numbers. I love calculating things and looking at trends and patterns. Big nerd shit, basically. I love it. So every 3 months on the podcast, I check in to see how everything's been going. And because this is the second quarterly update, I will be comparing my stats in this quarter to the first quarter. I also asked you on Instagram what you want from this episode. So if you're not following me on Instagram and you want to participate more in episodes, then you can do that over at the_community_library on Instagram. So Ready Yeti on Instagram asked how I'm keeping up with reading and my busy schedule. So for some context, the first quarter of my year from January to March, was not very busy. I was at home, I was on holiday, I was just kind of hanging out, vibing. So I was able to read quite a lot. This quarter of the year, however, the past 3 months have been very busy. I was preparing for a movie and then I actually went and shot that movie. And now I am finally back home. So it's been very busy and very hectic. International travel in the time of a pandemic is very stressful and there are a lot more precautions that you have to take. So the process is a lot longer. So, you know, Ready Yeti, that's a great question. How have I been keeping up with reading? Not very well. I really haven't been doing well with reading. Traveling and working for me, like you would think that traveling, you know, it's a very long flight from Australia to America. You'd think that I'd read a lot, but often I'm so stressed I can't focus on a book. And similarly, when I'm working, whenever I get stuck into filming something, I'm so consumed by that story and that world that I find it quite hard to actually concentrate on any other type of media, whether it's books or movies or TV shows. I often just watch trashy reality TV while I'm working to kind of decompress because it can be quite intense when you're stuck in this other fictional world, and I always want to keep focused on that because that's the priority, is working. So for some numbers context, in the first quarter of the year, I read 29 books, and in this quarter, I read 15 books. I have a goal to read 100 books by the end of the year, and I am currently, as Goodreads won't stop telling me, 8 books behind my goal. And look, I'm a very competitive and ambitious person when it comes to, I guess, academia. I like turning things into a game and winning at that game. But with reading, and especially with this year, you know, I'm trying to not feel disappointed with myself. And when you look at the overall picture, like, yes, I am behind on my reading goal. However, it's because I was working and I was doing the thing that I love. I just have to be okay with that. And ultimately, I am. I'm really not stressing about it. I also know that when December comes, like, I'll be on holiday and I can read as much as I want to catch up to my goal, which is what I end up doing at the end of every year anyway. So I guess that's my little reflection bit of the episode. Now let's get stuck into the numbers. So if you want the actual numbers, I read 5 books in April, 7 books in May, and 3 books in June, which, look, that's an all-time low for me, but I don't mind. It's fine. And by the way, like, just to, you know, I'm comparing myself to myself, not to anyone else. If you read one book, you are a reader. So just want to put that out there. David on Instagram asked how I'm going with my goal of reading more nonfiction. Well, David, here's my stats for you. I read 12 fiction books and only 3 nonfiction books these past 3 months. What is that, like 20%? So I guess that's not too bad. Nonfiction I find difficult and more tedious to read, and I feel like I need to focus a lot more on nonfiction. So in these past 3 months where I've been seeking out things that are easy to read, of course I didn't pick up much nonfiction. But there are a lot of nonfiction books on my TBR back at home that I definitely have to read. I always like looking at a breakdown of the format in which I read books. So for example, if I read them physically, if I read them on audio, or if I read them on my iPad as an ebook. When we look at the stats from last quarter, over a third of the books that I read physically. Whereas this quarter, it's much more evenly spread. I read 6 physical books, 5 audiobooks, and 4 ebooks. And that's just because when I travel, Well, this is a new rule I've implemented. I used to bring lots of books with me when I traveled because I love reading books physically. It's so much fun. I love the feel of the pages. But I just discovered that that was not sustainable. It made my bag really heavy, and it just wasn't a fun time. And so for this new trip, I brought only 3 physical books with me, and they were 3 comfort reads that I ended up actually not reading. So when I was away, everything I read was either on my iPad or an audiobook. When we look at the source that I got my books from, my leading source of books is the library. It was last quarter, it is again this quarter, with 11 books from the library, 3 books I already owned, and 1 book that I purchased. Little Jack Corner on Instagram asked me to do a genre breakdown, which I always love. 6 books that I read were contemporary, 3 were classics, and then the remaining were just from other genres. I'm not surprised that contemporary is my leading genre and classics is my second leading genre. That was the same last quarter. I am finding though that I'm reading a lot more contemporary modern books. If you look at my stats from 2-3 years ago, I was reading so many more classics, and now I feel like I've checked off quite a lot of the classics that I really wanted to get to that felt very urgent for me, and now I'm moving into more contemporary fiction. If we look at the breakdown by age, this has changed, which I think is interesting and very indicative of the headspace I was in these past 3 months. So last quarter, 20 books that I read were adult and 9 books were YA. This quarter, I read 9 adult books, 3 YA books, and 3 middle grade books. I think this is an interesting statistic, just because it shows that, like, I didn't want to read sad, heavy adult fiction these past 3 months. I read a lot more Jacqueline Wilson. I read some Percy Jackson just because it's easier to read middle grade and YA, and I just wanted something light and easy to read while working. So on this topic, Whitman 2018 asked on Instagram, does your selection of books change depending if you are working in the US or at home? So from the trends, we can see that, like, obviously I read a lot more on my iPad and via audio when I'm in the US, and I also gravitate to, I guess, more comfort reads, things that aren't heavy or difficult to get through because I'm busy working with other stuff. Another statistic that I thought was interesting is looking at, I guess, the ratio of authors I've read from before versus authors that are new to me. So last quarter, 8 out of the 28 authors that I read from were authors I'd read from before. So that means I read from 20 new authors. This quarter, 9 out of 13 authors I had already read from. So I only read 4 books from authors I hadn't read from before. So that shows that I was rereading some childhood favorites, and also that I was going for safe bets. These past 3 months, I haven't really stepped out of my comfort zone for reading, also because I just felt like I was in a reading slump and I wanted to read things that I knew I would love. Let's look at the breakdown of nation of origin. Now, this statistic has changed quite a lot. Last quarter, my two leading nations were the US and the UK at 10 and 9 books each. This quarter, my leading nation is the UK with 8 books, then the US with 2 books, Australia with 2, and then 1 from Iran, 1 from Canada, and 1 from China. So you can see that I didn't read much these past 3 months, and so my nations of origin, is that category isn't very interesting or diverse. The reason the number of books from the UK is so high is because I reread 3 Jacqueline Wilson books. And Jacqueline Wilson is obviously from the UK and one of my favorite children's authors, so that's why that number's so high. Last quarter, I read 6 books in translation, which I was so happy with. That's 2 books in translation every month. And this quarter, I read 1 book in translation. I'm definitely going to try and improve on that statistic this next quarter. I want to read 12 books in translation this year and 12 Australian books. I'm behind on both of those goals, but you know what? We're just gonna keep going with it. So those are all the stats that I wanted to talk to you about, and now I want to highlight 3 favorite books from the last 3 months. Last episode, the way it worked out is that I had 1 favorite from each month. Because I only read 3 books in June and none of them were really standout favorites, this time I've got 1 favorite from April and 2 favorites from May. And with the books that I highlight in these quarterly reading stats updates, I always try and highlight books that I haven't talked about on the podcast before. So these won't be book club picks or books that I read for challenges or for episodes. These are books that I just read in my own time and that I haven't had a chance to talk about on the podcast before. So that's why I'm highlighting them here. So my favorite for April was Felix Ever After by Kacen Callender. High school student Felix Love has, ironically, never been in love. He's proud of his identity as Black, queer, and transgender, but he secretly fears that he's one marginalization too many to get his own happily ever after. When an anonymous student begins sending him transphobic messages, Felix comes up with a plan for revenge that lands him in a strange love triangle. This YA contemporary was such a wholesome and heartwarming palate cleanser, and it did help me get out of my reading slump that I entered into at the end of March. I love Kacen Callender as an op-ed writer. Their article on J.K. Rowling and being a trans fan of Harry Potter was one of my main references in my own episode on J.K. Rowling. It's a great article. I'll link it in the show notes for you to read. So having read their journalist work, it was so cool to sit down and read their fiction work. Felix Ever After is a really truthful and heartfelt portrayal of queer teenagers growing up and trying to navigate friendships and relationships. You know, sometimes when you read YA and you think, gosh, this author has not been a teenager in a long time. I did not get that feeling with Felix Ever After at all. Kacen Callender really kind of just essentialized what it's like to grow up as a teenager in today's day and age. It was a really funny and sweet book, but also really stressful. There were so many mistakes that were made and so many really tricky situations. But what I loved is that Callender really treated the characters with compassion and kindness. So even though the good and kind-hearted characters sometimes made mistakes, they recognized their missteps pretty quickly and apologized accordingly, and it was just lovely to see that growth in the characters. This book is also so much about art and expression through art. So Felix is participating in a summer art program, and each student's art medium really reflected their character. And so Felix's character arc is mirrored in his journey to becoming a better artist, and I just loved the connections that were made there. I also loved Kacen Callender's discussions on being scared to fall in love and resisting vulnerability for fear of being hurt. I feel like that inner conflict was so eloquently described and really thoughtfully explored. I just really loved that sentiment because I think that fear is so real and I guess really connected with me. Overall, I really enjoyed this coming-of-age story about art, identity, and first love. If you really like Elizabeth Acevedo's work, or perhaps Love, Simon by Becky Albertalli, this, I think, is one you would really love as well. In May, I really loved Act Your Age, Eve Brown by Talia Hibbett. The last book in the Brown Sisters trilogy, this one follows the youngest and flightiest of the sisters, Eve Brown. After her life descends into chaos, more chaos than usual, that is, Eve decides to leave home to grow up and prove herself, though she's not quite sure how. One car crash and bad job interview later, Eve finds herself under the employment of the reserved and proper Jacob Wayne. Hilarity and love ensue, obviously. Was anyone surprised that I love this book? I wasn't surprised. If you've somehow missed out on the Brown Sisters trilogy by Talia Hibbett, the first book, Get a Life, Chloe Brown, blew up on Booktonet. It's a romance about Chloe Brown falling in love with a beautiful man named Red. And then Chloe also has two younger sisters, so the two subsequent books in the series are companion novels that follow each other sister finding love and happiness, and it's really sweet and cute. So Eve Brown is the last in the series. I had obviously already read Chloe Brown and Danny Brown. I wouldn't say you have to read them in order, but it's nice. It helps, I guess. So after really loving Chloe Brown and Danny Brown, I knew this one was going to be a hit with me, and of course it was. I must admit, Jacob isn't my favorite romantic hero in the series. Zaf from Get a Life, Danny Brown is my favorite. Don't at me, Red Stans. but I still really loved how Jacob's relationship with Eve developed. I felt like their chemistry was really natural, and I really liked how the will we, won't we, no we can't be together stage of the story was relatively short-lived. That to me is always the most annoying part of any romance, is them scrambling to come up with reasons why they can't be together, and I liked how that was pretty short-lived. Eve and Jacob were both really likable and engaging protagonists, and I enjoyed reading from both perspectives. I also really liked the setting of the Airbnb in the country. Just that whole aesthetic of the Airbnb and cottagecore and all of that, I love it. Of course I do. So I really liked everything in the middle of the book, though I did find the beginning and the ending a little far-fetched. I know it's a romance, it's not supposed to be super realistic, but the third act fight especially, I wish it hadn't happened. And I know it has to happen in a romance. I know you need a third act fight. But because the build-up to their romance was so drawn out, I thought they would just get like a really nice happy ending and no third act fight in the last 30 pages. And I would have been so happy with that. But alas, I know how these things work. So we had a third act fight, which I wasn't stoked about, but that's my only criticism. And now the series has come to a close. I honestly can't tell you which Brown Sister novel is my favorite. I like aspects of every one of them. I really love Chloe's love of comfort. I love Danny's dedication to her work, and Eve's personal growth in the story I thought was so wonderful. In terms of the romantic heroes, I love Red's motorbike and the fact that he's an artist, but Zaf is ultimately my favorite hero. And I think of the three romantic heroes, Jacob and I would be best friends. And now that the Brown Sisters trilogy is done, what am I going to do now? I guess I'll have to go back and read more of Talia Hibbett's back catalogue, or find a new romance series. If you can recommend me like a good romance series or romance book similar to Talia Hibbett's Brown Sisters trilogy, please let me know. DM me on Instagram or something. I would love more stuff like this. So my other May favorite, because I didn't have a favorite in June, was A Midsummer Night's Dream by William Shakespeare. One of Shakespeare's most well-known comedies, A Midsummer Night's Dream takes place in the woods over one night in summer. We have four young Athenian lovers caught up in love triangles and squares, the king and queen of fairyland dealing with marital problems, and a troupe of amateur actors rehearsing for a play. All in the woods, all on the same night. And everything is of course complicated when the King of the Fairies Hobgoblin, Robin Goodfellow, also known as Puck, gets hold of a magic flower that makes people fall in love with the first thing they lay their eyes on. Okay, so before you stop listening to this episode because you're like, ugh, Shakespeare, how boring. I promise you, A Midsummer Night's Dream is not boring. It's super fun. It's magical. It's glittery. I love it. if you're not a fan of Shakespeare, just hear me out on what I have to say about it. And if you are a Shakespeare fan, then I hope you like A Midsummer Night's Dream too. So A Midsummer Night's Dream is my favorite Shakespeare play, even though I've never studied it. I grew up with a really beautiful illustrated edition of the text, and I saw it a few times in the park when I was younger. And it remains one of the most exciting and magical Shakespeare plays for me. I love fairies, I love magic potions, I love dramatic love squares, so of course I loved rereading A Midsummer Night's Dream. And because I haven't studied it in school, I'm not going to give you a whole essay on the themes and metaphors and double entendres and all of that. But instead, I'm going to give you three superficial reasons why I really like A Midsummer Night's Dream. And if you are not a fan of Shakespeare, then maybe these fun reasons will encourage you to read it. So number one, why I love A Midsummer Night's Dream, it's really fun. It is whimsical and delightful and funny, and most of the comedy still works today. I think there's a misconception that Shakespeare is dull and boring and serious. And if you go and see a bad production of Macbeth, then maybe yes, but A Midsummer Night's Dream is really fun, really witty, just kind of magical and silly and over the top. Number two reason why I love it, it invented the fairy core aesthetic. A Midsummer Night's Dream blends fairies and magic with Greek mythology, which is everything I could ever want ever in my life, ever. Plus, you've also got what I would argue is a precursor to the steampunk aesthetic. Maybe this is a discussion that could have its own episode, but here's my case for the precursor to steampunk in A Midsummer Night's Dream. You've got this troupe of amateur actors called the Mechanicals. And they're called the Mechanicals because they're all craftsmen. So there's a weaver, a joiner, a bellows mender, a tinker, and a tailor. So the play blends magic and fantasy with mechanical trade, which is very reminiscent of steampunk, which blended steam-powered technology from the early 1900s with fantasy. So there you go. If you like the steampunk aesthetic, if you like Greek mythology, if you like magic, if you like fantasy, it's all in A Midsummer Night's Dream. Now, of course, I'm selling you an aesthetic that you can't really see when you read the play, but if you're interested in watching a film adaptation, I highly recommend the 1999 one. It's got Michelle Pfeiffer in it. She's amazing. She plays Queen of the Fairies, and the aesthetic in that film version is so gorgeous. I'm obsessed. Reason number three why I love A Midsummer Night's Dream, it features a play within a play. If you're a long-time listener of the podcast, you know that I love stories within stories, and the play that the Mechanicals put on within the play of A Midsummer Night's Dream is a version of Romeo and Juliet, which Shakespeare wrote a few years after. So it's very funny. You can see the seeds of Romeo and Juliet in there, and I just love stories within stories, plays within plays, dreams within dreams. Brilliant. So those are my three reasons why I love A Midsummer Night's Dream. As always, if you're hesitant to pick up Shakespeare, I recommend using No Fear Shakespeare on SparkNotes or Schmoop to help you out. Whenever I read a Shakespeare play, I listen to a dramatized audio production at the same time, so I can hear how it's supposed to sound at the same time as reading the words. And I find this is really helpful to keep me focused on the words. And also, a good actor will always convey the meaning of Shakespearean language in their tone of voice, so you can get the gist, even if you don't catch every single word. I've done quite a few Shakespeare-related podcast episodes, so if you're interested in any of them, I'll have them linked in the show notes for you. They're all very accessible. I haven't done a big kind of intellectual analysis of any Shakespeare plays. Every Shakespeare episode that I write is written intended for anyone who has never read or experienced Shakespeare before. So if you're interested in that, I'll have it all linked for you. So those are my three highlights for this past quarter. We've got a YA coming of age, an adult romance and a Shakespeare, so very different things. The Fearless Berry on Instagram asked what's on my TBR for the next quarter. I don't really know. No, I do know everything. No, I'll tell you what. If you'd asked me this a week ago, I would have said Six of Crows, because I've been reading that for like 2 months now. But at the start of July, I was like, you know what? You know what? I'm 60% of the way through. I'm really struggling. I just don't think it's for me. So I officially DNF'd it at the start of this month. I just don't think high fantasy is for me. I really tried to get into it. I got 60% of the way through and I just had to let it go. I'm sorry to all the Six of Crows fans out there. I know there are a lot of you. Please don't come for me. So really the only actual book that I must finish is The Blood of Olympus by Rick Riordan. It's the last book in the Heroes of Olympus series. I read half of it and then my loan was up and I had to give it back to the library. So when I get home, I'm going to borrow it again and then finish it. I've just got to knuckle down and do it. I'm scared. I'm scared of finishing it because then what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'm scared one of them is going to die. Okay, anyway, that's a discussion for another time. So really, that's the only thing that I definitely have to read. Other than that, a goal is just to get through some more books on my physical TBR. As I said, it's mostly nonfiction. So yeah, I think that's about it. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe to the Community Library on iTunes or Spotify. You can also follow me on Instagram at @the_community_library or at Angauri Rice. Either one is fine, but I spend more time on the Community Library. I also have a blog, which is angaurislibrary.wordpress.com. There you can find more links and resources and episode notes and all of that fun stuff if you like extra reading. And this episode marks the end of season 4. I will be back soon with season 5. I've got to plan it all out, so if you have any episode suggestions, you can always DM me. I don't respond to DMs, but I write down all your suggestions in a big document, and I always consult it when I go to plan new episodes. So I will chat to you very soon. In the meantime, I'll be on the Community Library Instagram. I hope you are taking care of yourselves and reading good books. Bye.